Hello and welcome to the podcast Sport and Life. We'll get to the show in just a second, but first a word to the sponsors. Chief sponsors, been with us a number of years now. Big thank you to Bang Olufsen Cheltenham and Serene AV, specialists in some of the finest home entertainment brands, providing solutions based around high quality customer service and installations. Look up Serene AV online or head to Jason Briggs's beautiful Cheltenham store, the courtyard there in the Montpellier area of the town. If you're looking to optimize your immunity, remember the podcast has a long-standing relationship with Cytoplan's food-based supplements. I've been taking them for 20 years under the stewardship of my father, Dr. Mark Draper, more than 20 years now. And with the podcast, you get 30% off your first purchase, 10% ongoing with the discount code. And this is a new code, by the way, Draper10X. So my last name, Draper, all capital letters, the numbers 10 and the capital letter X. That's at cytoplan.co.uk at checkout. cytoplan.co.uk. Now, numerous factors can hinder your athletic potential. However, what if I told you your fitness of your 100 trillion cells might be the problem? Well, Cell Nutrition Sport are the only company that works on fitness at a deep cellular level and have developed a protocol called Cellular Fitness, consisting of everything your cell needs to be fit. The protocol is 100% natural, harvested from the ocean, not manufactured in a lab or a warehouse. The Cellular Fitness Protocol is made up of Hydrate 78, which is from marine plasma, providing 78 plus electrolytes and trace elements that your body needs in ionic form. Hydrate 78 provides complete recovery, eradicate cramps, and enhances your stamina, while Hydrate 78 Night allows you to remineralize while you sleep, giving a higher rate of deeper sleep, which results in complete repair and stronger immunity. I've been taking this for a couple of months now and found a real boost of not only my workouts, but just general well-being and feelings of hydration and fitness. But find out more at cellularfitness.world and you can use the code TED10, T-E-D, all capital letters, numbers 10 for 10% off your entire basket. Well, thanks for listening to all that. Onwards and upwards with the show.
Fair enough.
Tom, happy Friday. How are you, sir? Good to see you.
I am excellent, thank you. I'm on top form because today, believe it or not, is our transfer team end of window party.
Really? Fantastic. Where is it? Where are you going?
So we are off out into London. The producer knows a guy that owns a steak restaurant.
It's an Argentinian chap.
I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but yeah. They don't sponsor our podcast. So I wouldn't mention their name.
Free steak.
If they give me some free steak tonight, I might just slip that into conversation next week. So that's in Leicester Square somewhere.
Nice.
So we're going there 5 o'clock. Good turnout for us all, and looking forward to it. We always try to do this after the end of every window, but it's so difficult to get times when everybody's available.
Yeah, like you said, even better this year because it was a tough window for everyone, wasn't it? Trying to get stories and bring lots of content to air, filling lots of airtime.
Yeah, exactly. What about you? Good week?
Yeah, it was. It has been a good week, actually, on the lakes. We've had a little bit of a difficult time at home just because Zoe's supposed to be back at school this week, but we think, because she was ill last week on half term and she's been off this week, she has something called slapped cheek, which is basically she had muscle pains a couple of weeks ago and then last week was just really coughing really badly. And the problem is she's coughing to the point of, being sick and retching at some point. So it's been quite scary. But luckily, my dad's a doctor, so he's taken a look at her and he thinks she's on the mend, which is good. But obviously, she's been up a lot in the night and we've been up a lot in the night. So it's one of those things where particularly Carla's bore the brunt of it. So it's just tough when your kid's ill.
Oh, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. Hopefully she's on the mend. I didn't know your dad was a doctor, though. That's handy.
Yeah, he's a GP. My brother's a GP as well, actually, and my sister-in-law, so he's a good right. team. And my uncle.
Oh, well, no more waiting weeks for an appointment for me. I'll just give them a call.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe that's what I should have done. But I remember going to see my dad in hospital because he used to be an anaesthetist. He'd be there all weekend when I was a little boy, and actually just not liking the smell of the hospital put me off, I think. And also, it wouldn't have been very practical for me to try and do surgery, I think. not the most handy kind of guy, so. It would have been interesting training.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's not true.
Right, Tom, German footballers. This was spawned in sad times, really. Andreas Bremer, one of, I guess, the legends of Italia 90. He was on the opposition side for West Germany when we were boys. And we talk about falling in love and cementing our love for football in Italia 90. And great fullback. Scored against England, didn't he? Scored in the final. Obviously, I think Paul Parker's back had a bit of a hand to do with the goal against England. But that was one that shook me. He was only in his early 60s. And we thought, let's talk about legendary German players.
Yeah, because we did consider two-footed players, didn't we? Just because he was someone who was very well known for being exactly that, a two-footed player. And as I've mentioned on this podcast loads of times, that is something that's always really impressed me. Players can use both feet, and he was one of them. So it was very sad news. We thought, well, the two-footed one, there's not that many players who are genuinely both-footed, are there? So we thought, in that case, we'll just keep it as a German.
Yeah.
Baby Germans. But I found this quite hard, you know, because I was always brought up, and I've never changed. You know, I've always been brought up, we don't like Germany. We don't like Germany. Yeah. So, I'd think of my favourite players, but it's hard to find some favourite Germany players when I've always been brought up to not like them, even like in the kind of like very backwards way of on holiday, the Germans, they'll steal the sunbeds. You know, and when you grow up, obviously, as you get older, you realise that probably wasn't the right way of thinking that, you know, but actually back then it was like, don't like Germans. But because of like a lot of it was football reasons.
Yes.
Far more historical reasons that I wouldn't have known back then about. But
sure.
Also like stealing sunbeds and stuff. Yeah, we don't like Germans. Well, I found it quite hard because I have this deep rooted thing where, well, I just want Germany to lose. So it's been quite hard for me this.
Well, the thing that Bremer brought home to me though as well, you almost need your rivals to define that passion, don't you? And I think for us growing up, obviously, it was West Germany, then Germany, and then Argentina were the big foes, the big kind of, and there was, like you say, cultural kind of context to both of those rivalries. But it does make you think, actually, that those great moments for England or moments of even sadness kind of needed, you know, West Germany, Germany or Argentina there to make them. And actually, they're, you know, great footballing powerhouse. So the interesting thing about trying to find the great players for me was as well, there's not that many individualists. You think of Germany's great teams and very efficient and great at winning games, particularly not many dribbling kind of style players that you think of. You know, I've got one in my team who was a good dribbler, but they're very kind of efficient, very strong, very powerful, but you don't always think of like Lionel Messi type players for Germany.
Yeah, it's a good point that you don't think of flying wingers, do you?
No, I mean, that's, not really.
I guess that could be changing when you think
or
of...
Even small strikers you don't really think of particularly.
Yeah. Yeah, good point that. Whereas you do think of someone like these days, and Jamal Musiala, who chose Germany over England, didn't he? Serge Gnabry. But that's very recent. You don't think of those great teams that have won. I mean, they won four World Cups. You don't think of flying wingers and tricky, you know, like, you know, nippy strikers, poacher types either. Yeah, good point. Good point.
It's interesting. Yeah. That was that nationality thing obviously came up with Declan Rice and England. And I think Kobe Mainoo might be a similar thing for with choosing your country of your parents or your family or where you're born.
And Grealish, Hargreaves.
Yeah, Hargreaves as well. And there's people in my list, actually. Germany seems to be kind of quite often players have heritage from different parts of the world and have had to choose to play for Germany. So that's quite an interesting subtext.
Yeah, Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, well... Stay tuned. Let's do a guess who, shall we? I've got one here.
Please.
Germany player played in the Premier League, played for Augsburg, Blau-Weiss Berlin, who I haven't heard of. I think that might have been in the East German days. Werder Bremen, Lazio, Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool, and Fulham. Won promotion with Fulham as well. He won the Bundesliga with Werder Bremen in 1988, the World Cup with Germany in 1990, the Champions League with Dortmund in 1997. As I say, Football League Championship with Fulham in 2001. He was at Liverpool from 97 to 99, so same era as Paul Ince, who we've talked about on the pod before. Any thoughts?
Well, as soon as you said Liverpool and then Fulham, I immediately thought, for some, obviously I'm wrong and I can laugh at it now, I immediately thought, Jari Litmanen, right? But he's obviously he's finish or something, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
He's not finished. He's only 28. He's but obviously, then I gave myself a slap in the face. God, because I'm thinking about Liverpool players who played for Germany, and one sprung to mind, but I'm almost certainly didn't play for Fulham after Liverpool.
It's a very German name. Part of it you might associate with baked beans. There's another cue.
Oh, I've got it then. Fine. I have got it, but I cannot picture him in a Fulham shirt, so that's passed me by. But I know who you mean.
Yeah,
I'm almost certain I've got it now, and I absolutely loved him. So fair enough. Good.
Beautiful. He's good in the air, by the way, even though he's only 5 feet 10 inches tall. Let's
only
get on to
towers above me.
You're right. You're right. Exactly. It's a great, great height. Average height. That's a perfect height. Let's look at our top fives. Tom, go down from 5 to 1. Shall we? Who's number five?
Yeah, I've gone for someone who was very, very versatile. I think his best position was probably right back, but he actually, towards the end of his career, he moved to left back, but he was also, initially, he played a lot in midfield as well. Mm. And this is Philipp Lahm.
Brilliant. Yeah, trailblazer, wasn't he? Because he did.
Yeah, did Guardiola. Did you have him?
Yeah. I haven't got him on my list, actually, but I did think of him. But he's part of what they call now the inverted fullbacks that we grew up. It was called tucking in, wasn't it? But
yeah.
He always got a fancy name for everything now. But he came into midfield for what, Guardiola in the Bayern era? And that was, I suppose, a significant shift in tactics.
Yeah, he was, I mean, he was captain of Germany as well. So it's a good start in that sense. So captain, a leader, he was versatile, as we've just said, as well. And he was part of, there was a golden generation of Germany players, definitely. Mm. And he was kind of saw through the end of that golden generation. And he was loved by all of his teammates. Everybody respected him. Apparently, he was a really good guy, but never been lucky enough. Never been lucky enough to meet him. But the discussion in Germany was always, right, where should we play? Where do we get the best out of Philipp Lahm? And in the end, it was just like, well, wherever we need him. Mm. Put him wherever we need him, and he's probably going to be our most important players. And retired quite young as well. He was just like, I'm going out at the top, kind of not quite Cantona-esque, but that sort of thing. Everyone's like, why is he retiring so early? Mm. But Philipp Lahm's in there for me for all of those reasons.
Yeah, very quick, wasn't he? Quite two-footed as well, incisive. I think he had a decent shot on him as well. Like Philipp Lahm, for your Philipp Lahm, I'll go number five, Michael Ballack. 42 goals in 98 caps for Germany from 99 to 2010. He played for Bayer Leverkusen from 99 to 2002, 27 league goals and 79 appearances. Remember, from midfield for Bayern Munich, I think was probably the sweet spot of his club career, 44 league goals and 107 appearances. So you're not far off one in two there for a midfield player. And then for Chelsea, 2006 to 2010, he won a number of trophies with them, 3 FA Cups, won the double in 2010, runner-up in the Champions League in 2008. For Chelsea, scored 17 goals in 105 Premier League appearances. Also won 3 Bundesliga titles in his time at Bayern and 3 German Cups. Just a brilliant sort of statuesque midfielder, Tom. Fantastic in the air, 6 feet, 2 inches. Great at arriving into the box late and seemed to have a bit of everything. It just felt like maybe at Chelsea he came in at the wrong time because he came towards the end of the Mourinho era and then there was a little bit of a fallow period for them before Ancelotti came in.
He was still brilliant though. Absolutely brilliant for them. And the fans, they've never forgotten him. And we had on the transfer shows we would sometimes do on days where there wasn't as much transfer news as we'd like. We'd come up with features like we'd have forgotten men. We'd have like best January signings ever if it was January. And we actually had best ever free transfers because Ballack didn't cost Chelsea a penny.
It's amazing.
So he has to go down as one of the best Bosmans ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And just brilliant technique on the ball, wasn't he? Where he could control it and just hold people off and pivot and lay it off and then finishing just clinical. And he had that knack of arriving in the box at just the right time.
And he always taught as well as a kid, people I'd go to the game with, the older people would say, just look at how much time he has on the ball. Mm. In reality, he's got no more time than the midfielder next to him, just isn't as good as him. but he looks like he's got time on the ball because he's so calm. And Ballack was exactly like that. We had it at Sunderland. I always remember we all of our players were like blood and thunder. It was just give it as much as you can. And that's how we would win games under Peter Reid. And we signed Stefan Schwartz. Remember him?
Yes. Played for Arsenal as well, yeah.
Yeah, we signed him. And then I suddenly realised what people meant when they would say, look how much time he's got on the ball, because he would get the ball. And it was as though, like, if I get the ball in my garden out there, like, I don't need to work. My son's only six. He'll come and try to tackle me, but, you know, realistically, he's not going to be able to, is he?
Not yet, no.
Oh, yeah, give it 6 months. And that was what it was like with Stefan Schwartz at Sunderland. Yes. And that's when I realised it. And Ballack had exactly that. The ball would go to his feet. He could have world-class players closing him down, but he was fine. He was quick-thinking enough to know, right, I've got the ball. I've got that option, that option, that option. I could just keep it. I could try and turn. Brilliant player. Good one, that.
Yep. Runner-up in 2002 in the World Cup. Turned 30 when he went to Chelsea. The time on the ball, I always think of Michael Laudrup. People talking about a lot about him when we were young kids. But I wonder, you talked about Gerrard and Lampard for England and Ballack going at 30 to Chelsea. Obviously, there was a young Frank Lampard there, whether that was a problem in terms of a little bit similar in terms of their style of play, maybe held Ballack up. Number four, Tom, for you?
Number four. I am going to go. I've kind of changed my order at the last minute now, actually, because... Nice. You know, when I talk about how I haven't got kind of favourite Germany players, because I've actually promoted someone from 4 to 3 on the basis that actually I did like this player, okay? So I'm going to go, I've moved number 3 down, he's been relegated, okay? So I'm going with a left back. And the reason I'm going for this player is because there's good transfer stories involved with him. So I've gone for, and I know that you won't have gone for him, I've gone for Christian Ziga.
I thought of Christian Ziga because he's one of the of our era, isn't he? Because of Euro 96 and Liverpool, he kind of sprung to mind, but I haven't got him in my five.
Well, I mean, in terms of quality, he shouldn't be in the top five. But I love the fact that this was a classic case of a club getting a contract wrong. Okay, so this might ring a bell to you, but if you don't know, it's very interesting, right? So he signed for Middlesbrough. That was his first time in the Premier League. He also played for Liverpool and Tottenham. Liverpool are part of this, actually. But he signed for Middlesbrough from, I think it was Milan. I think he went Bayern Munich, Milan, AC Milan, and then Middlesbrough. So he signed, it was the summer of 2000, right?
Yep.
And he signed for £5 million.
Yes.
Now, as you know, a lot of players have a clause in their contract where if another club bid a certain amount of money, that offer has to be accepted.
Yes, release so clause.
Release clause. So Middlesbrough paid £5 million for Christian Ziga, who was excellent for them, right? Guess how much his buyout clause was? He signed for 5 million.
Was it something like 2 million?
Well, it wasn't as bad as that. It was 5.5 million.
Oh, okay. So they actually got less. They paid less than the buyout.
So they still made a 500 grand profit.
Yeah.
But if you sign someone for 5 million, I mean, you at least make it 10 million, don't you?
Yeah.
Because at the time,
he was young.
Everyone knew about the buyout clause. When he signed for Middlesbrough I think he signed in 1999 and he was born in 1972. So 29 or so, maybe 27 or so. So peak age. And he was brilliant for them. Now, what happened was everyone knew about the buyout clause. So Liverpool were like, I know he wants to come to us. We're going to pay £5.5 million. Other clubs were saying to Middlesbrough, right, we'll give you 8. So Middlesbrough were desperate to try to get him. Because, by the way, he signed for Middlesbrough in the summer of 1999. Sorry. He went to Liverpool 1 year later, right?
Yes.
Brilliant season at Middlesbrough. They only made a 500 grand profit. Every other club was saying, we'll give you 8 million. And Middlesbrough were like, Christian, please go to these other clubs. He's like, no, I've got a buyout clause and I want to go to Liverpool. So he went to Liverpool. Now, it doesn't end there, the story, because 2 years later, so March 2002, Liverpool were fined £20,000 by the FA for making an illegal approach for Ziga, tapping up while he was at Middlesbrough, which is why Liverpool knew that he had the buyout clause, obviously, which is why Zeke himself knew how much he was going to get. The player himself was fined £10,000 as well in that as well. So the player was £10,000, Liverpool £20,000. He then went on to play for Tottenham as well in the Premier League. But I just love that story about how the buyout clause was only 500 grand more, which is why he was only there. But 72 caps for Germany as well, and 19 goals from left. Nine goals from left back.
Yeah, Euro 96 winner as well, and some football's coming home. But it's interesting that as well, because he won the treble, didn't he, at Liverpool? Cup treble in that 2000-2001 season. I think he only made 16 Premier League appearances. Looking, that's why I didn't put him in my top five, because he wasn't really instrumental necessarily to that treble of cups that Liverpool won. But very, very good player. Tom, you're looking sharp today, I should say, as ever. And I think, similar to myself, you've got a D-Rock polo shirt on, have you, sir?
I do. Look at the detail on that collar.
Beautiful.
I know a lot of people will be listening to this on Spotify or whatnot.
Beautiful stripe.
If you're on YouTube, you want to have a look at this. White polo shirt, very well fitting, quite like tight fitting, but not like, you know.
Restrictive.
That's a good word, restrictive. You've got the the label, the badge there. I love how it fits. The beauty of this is great in the summer, polo shirt, obviously, but also lovely under a kind of blazer.
Yes.
I mean, like a sort of light coloured blazer.
You wear that on Sky Sports News on a morning.
Beautiful. In the summer, I'm going to wear this at work, actually. It's not quite summery enough to have the short sleeves at the moment. But I love this one. And you've got the tracksuit on.
I have got the tracksuit on. Yeah, like you say, I think it's the fit is really cool. I like the look of the D-Rock clothes on, and you can check it out at D-Rock.uk as well. But it's the feel. Yeah, you can exercise in it because it feels tight and fitted, but it's got that stretch to it and you can relax in it as well. So I think it's worth looking at. And with Rumney and his good team, we do fantastic work for the Newcastle United Foundation, with the Newcastle United Foundation around mental health awareness. They've given us 35% off. So please check that out. If you go to
what's the code?
It is SAL35. So SAL, all capital letters, as in sport and life. And then 35, the numbers 3 and 5. So SAL35.
So when you go on the website and you see the prices, and you'll be like, that's very reasonably priced anyway. Well, don't worry, because actually you get 35% off that as well.
Absolutely. So Tom, how many have you done? I've done.
Yeah, you're number four now.
I'm on number four. Okay, brilliant. I will go.
Reverse order. So your second one, because we're reverse order.
Second one, reverse order, but number four. I will go for a maligned player at times, but one who I thought was absolutely class. Once got 25 assists in a season for Real Madrid, 19 assists in a season for Arsenal. Creative, skillful, glided over the ground. Pretty rapid, actually, when you saw him open his legs, as he did against England in 2010 to kind of befuddle Gareth Barry out on the wing. And it is Mesut Ozil, who retired in the past summer, aged 34. I think he got flack, but at Arsenal, they've been on a long trophyless run and they ended up getting a number of FA Cups. I think 4 FA Cups in his period there. Won the FIFA World Cup in 2014 with Germany. Also a German Cup winner earlier in his career with Werder Bremen. But for me, Mesut Ozil was pure class. And I saw a statistic that was a couple of years old, actually, but from the turn of this century, he was number 4 in terms of total assists. I think he got something like 295 career assists. I think only people like Ronaldo, Messi, and actually Thomas Müller, another German player, were ahead of him in the assist list. So Mesut Ozil, for me, a decent goal scorer, probably 1-4, 1-5 kind of record, has played at Fenerbahce in Istanbul, Basic here to end his career of Turkish heritage, had to decide for a long period of time whether he was going to play for Germany or Turkey. He actually left the German national team, said he felt discriminated against because of his Turkish heritage, spoke up controversially for the Uyghur Muslims in China, but that's a really serious issue that people should look at. So for my money, to raise awareness of that is big. But just generally, Mesut Ozil, I thought, was a class, skillful player.
Yeah, and Arsenal were trying to cut costs and he was on mega wage, which they gave him a mega wage so that he wouldn't leave for free, so that he would be, so that he would actually, you know, they could get a transfer fee for him, but they gave him so much money that nobody would pay a fee because no one could pay his wages. So it backfired on Arsenal that under different leadership at the time. My favourite Mesut Ozil moment, though, and you can probably look this up on YouTube, I think it might have even been, it was in a pre-match warm-up. It might have even been at the stadium alike, but that's irrelevant because it's a close-up on him.
He made his debut against Sunderland.
Oh, it could be. He's got some chewing gum in his mouth, as opposed to up his nose. He was just jogging along, and you see him drop the in a slow-mo, drop the chewing gum out of his mouth, kick it up, back up with his left foot, obviously left foot because he never used his right, back into his mouth. And you see someone, one of his teammates, looking at him. You can't see who the teammate is, but you tell his teammate is shocked. And Ozil just does this little smile, little wink, like, yeah, I just do that. Absolutely amazing.
Brilliant.
So I'm glad you've got him in just so I could talk about that moment because I loved it.
Imagine my daughter say it wasn't hygienic. Yeah, his Premier League debut for Arsenal was against Sunderland. I think he made an assist in the 11th minute, I read. Don't hold me to that, but I think it was great start and very creative player.
It was 2013-14 season, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
And I mean, that will have been, in fact, we started that season under Di Canio. So they probably beat us about 10-0.
He's still the quickest serving manager. As Beal surpassed him. I think it's Di Canio, yeah. It's the shortest.
Yeah, that's a good point. I see, yeah. Do you know
that's
what?
Close.
I can't believe we haven't done it. It feels like that the Michael Beal reign is already out of my mind, which it's amazing how you asked me about a good week and I've completely forgot that we sacked our manager, which completely forgot about. I'm already moving on to the next one. So
the Watford of the North, Sunderland, with these managerial changes.
Funny enough, a Watford fan messaged me saying, Sunderland of the new Watford. constantly changed their managers. I mean, at first though, for Watford, that had great success.
Yes. It's true.
They kept improving and then eventually it wasn't sustainable. So my number three then?
Yes, your number three.
Really gone for left footers here, haven't we? Because I've gone for another one at left back. And there's no way you would have got this one in. And I've got it because, again, this is a player who I really, really did love.
Yeah.
Loved him, right? More well-known for... In his whole career, he was more well-known for playing for Rangers.
Okay.
156 appearances and 58 goals from left back.
I'd imagine blonde hair.
Some of them would have been, I'd say more ginger, but some of them would have been free kicks because his nickname was the Hammer. Because he would strike the free kicks so hard, and I think he might have even taken some penalties as well, which would explain the goal record of 1 in 3 from left back.
I can see him in my eye, but I can't think of his name. It's really frustrating me. I don't know why it slipped out.
His name is Jörg Alberts.
Jörg Alberts, that's it. Yeah.
I loved him because, like I said, my Scottish team is Hamilton Academical. If I was pushed on whether I prefer Rangers or Celtic, maybe just about Rangers, but only because I loved Gascoigne and Laudrup when they were there together. See?
Yeah.
And I mean, Alberts was there 96 to 2001, so he was part of some of that era anyway. And I was mesmerised by how hard he could kick the ball. Like I was in cricket, I've always preferred the fast bowlers.
Because
I like
power.
I can't believe people can bowl that fast, and I'd be like scared of it as batsman. Yeah. I wish I could do it as a bowler.
You know what? It's similar in a way to a player playing for Liverpool at the same time, Jon Arne-Riise. Do you remember? He could absolutely smash the ball with his left foot. Another red-headed player.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. He actually did. He actually did. At the very end of his career, go back to Scotland to play for Clyde.
Oh, lovely!
For 7 appearances, so he did actually. He obviously loved it in Scotland. Who wouldn't love it in Scotland? I love that country. I do genuinely. I wish I lived there, to be honest.
Beautiful part of the
world. Half Scottish and half English. It's not even biased, but he did actually score 2 goals for Clyde, and I believe they were both free kicks actually, which makes sense. But he was brilliant for Rangers. Cost them £4 million in 1996. He helped them win their 9th league title in a row. Famously, they didn't get to number 10. Celtic stopped them, but nickname the Hammer. Played under Walter Smith. Played under Dick Advocaat as well. I think it might have been Dick Advocaat that sold him in the end. I think. But Jörg Alberts, the Hammer, because that was a player who I just loved. Thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant shout. And as we've often talked about, I think the 90s Rangers players kind of embossed on our mind as well, because it was certainly considered an equivalent really to the Premier League back in that era in terms of prestige and quality, with players like Rodney Wallace and Paul Gascoigne going up there. Right, my number three is the man with the most World Cup goals in history, 16 of them, scored in four World Cups, 2002, 2006, where he was top scorer, 2010, and then 2014 to help Germany to the title as a veteran in Brazil. Played for Kaiserslautern, Werder Bremen, Bayern Munich, Lazio in there as well. Again, a guy who was born in Poland, so they had a heritage kind of controversy to a certain extent, but it is the one and only Miroslav Klose, who was fantastic. So the people who scored in four World Cups is Uwe Seeler, who was one of the goal scorers as West Germany, I believe, knocked out England in the 1970 World Cup, also played in the 66 final against England. Then it's Pelé, Klose, who I've mentioned, of course, and Lionel Messi. And then Cristiano Ronaldo scored in five World Cups, so he's just above them. But for me, Miroslav Klose, just the ultimate, even though he's a towering guy, was just an ultimate goal poacher.
Yeah, he, you see, I considered Klose, and it, that's one where I was actually going to have him at number two, but I had a replacement. I actually had a like-for-like replacement ready, ooh, which I've now subbed in next.
Interesting.
Because I think Klose, just that record of the amount of goals that he scored at World Cups and major tournaments, can't ignore it. He just kept going forever, didn't he? Miroslav, yeah. Klose. And he always seemed quite effortless too.
Mm.
And in this day and age,
part player. Yeah.
In this day and age where everybody's looking for a striker, Miroslav Klose, I mean, what did you go through his clubs there? He played for
Werder Bremen, Kaiserslautern, Bayern Munich, Lazio. He got 71 goals in 137 appearances for Germany overall. So it's way, you know, better than one in two. Won the Bundesliga with Bayern, Coppa Italia.
See, he didn't have a lot of clubs there, did he? You see, and you'd think that because someone like that would be in such demand, you'd imagine that was just pure loyalty.
Yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. And he was just a one of those players with a knack, we said a Balak, but as a striker, Klose just appeared. And I think you have to give extra emphasis, don't you, to the big tournaments, people who deliver on the biggest stage at the right time, get themselves fit or whatever, mentally prepared, that seem to just be able to do it. And I always associate him as well with Lukas Podolski, who was a Germany player around the same time of Polish heritage. It was another interesting time. But yeah, it's my number three. Tom, who have you gone for? So you're number two.
So I've taken closer out and I've replaced it with Oliver Bierhoff, who again,
yes,
imposing striker. I'll just read this article out, actually. Now, just to see what website it's from to give them. It's called CF Classics, this website. Now, it's quite interesting going through what they said, because they've actually got Bierhoff down as the 28th best German player. All right.
Really?
So quite low down in the list. But a lot of them were before our time, so it's hard to
like say much about them.
So standing at an imposing height of 6 feet, 4 inches, Oliver Bierhoff was a dominant presence in the penalty area and was renowned for his aerial prowess and goal-scoring ability, well-known for his intelligent positioning, making well-timed runs and using his height and strength to win headers and score goals. Bierhoff was also adept at holding the ball up and bringing his teammates into play, displaying good link-up play. His goal-scoring instincts and physicality made him a potent threat in front of the net throughout his career, which is absolutely right about Oliver Bierhoff. And I was always really surprised that he never came to the Premier League, because he just seemed like the perfect striker.
How long ago did he retire? You got that information there?
2003.
Yeah, so it's quite,
2003. But he actually made more appearances. This is a surprise. Made more appearances for Ascoli than anyone else. 117. That's the only club where he made more than 100 appearances, but Milan, AC Milan, made 91 with 36 goals. But Udinese, 86 appearances, 57 goals.
Yeah. And who did Germany look? Germany had the sort of poor man, Kirsten Janker, to follow him, didn't they? He's the big striker afterwards.
Yeah. He's the one who scored. Did Janker score against us in the 5-1?
Yeah, well, I think he did. Yeah, he scored the first goal. Didn't he score the first goal of that?
I'm thinking of Jan Koller.
Oh, maybe.
I might be getting those two mixed up. But Bierhoff, back in the old Championship Manager games, you'd always sign it. Whatever English club you were at, if you were at a top English club, you'd always sign Oliver Bierhoff. He's one of the best strikers in the game. But never came to England. I can't remember him really being linked that much to the Premier League either.
Having beer in his name as well, I thought that'd be one of the reasons you chose
him. That's the same in Germany, isn't it? So 70 appearances, 37 goals for his country, and again, won won Euro 96 and was runner-up in the 2002 World Cup as well.
Class. I like it. Well, my number two is another striker. We should mention as well, I haven't gone for Jürgen Klinsmann. I'm not sure Tom has either, because we've mentioned him in lots of our conversations about best signings and Tottenham's best players as well. So I haven't got Klinsmann, but I've got his strike partner from Italia 90, who apparently was called Tante Cathy, is his nickname, or Aunt Cathy. This is the one and only who I think of as like Germany's Scouser, Rudi Völler, because at the same time, the Harry Enfield show was on TV. And he used to, Harry Enfield, mock up Scousers with the curly hair and the moustache. And this was the one and only Rudi Völler, who scored 47 goals in 90 appearances for West Germany and Germany, won the Coppa Italia for Roma, won the Champions League with Marseille. Remember when Marseille were that awesome team in the early 90s? Won it in 1993.
They got that taken off them, that title, didn't they?
Has it been taken out because of the financial irregularities and stuff? Yeah.
Bernard Tapie. Bernard
Tapie. Yeah. Well, Basil Boley scored in theory against AC Milan in that final. Won the World Cup, of course, with West Germany in 1990. Scored in the final in 86 as well, that we don't remember in real time, but actually got the equaliser. West Germany came back from 2-0 down against Argentina before the one and only Maradona put Burruchaga through to win it for Argentina. And yeah, just looked like, at the time, just a wonderful character. And always remembering, etched in my mind from Italia 90 with that curly mop of hair.
You see, I'm not happy that you've gone for him. I refused to have Rudi Völler in.
Did you?
Because you know what he did with Frank Rijkaard.
Oh, yes. Sorry, that's actually, I didn't think of that at all. But yeah, I thought about
that.
Yeah,
so I just, when he spat at him. Was it the quarterfinals?
May well have been, yeah.
1990, I think it was.
Yeah.
Or maybe the last 16, because the semi-finals, they beat us. So it was either the quarterfinals or the last 16, obviously.
Yeah.
And he spat at Frank Rijkaard, and you could see the spit in Rijkaard's hair. It was like, it was horrible. And I like, as much an excellent striker he was, I was like, I'm not having him.
Good shout. Well, I've completely forgot about that, but now you've ruined my five. I'm regretting it, but he's in there as it stands.
If this were a competition and we got people to vote on whose top five is better, you'd be deducted points. Yeah.
Although I have to say, Jason Briggs from Serene AV and Bang Olufsen Cheltenham, who sponsors the podcast, long-term sponsor, did message me. And he's about a decade or so older than us, but he said Völler was his most kind of recognisable face that came to mind with Germany. So that's interesting.
We had quite a good response on the on X, didn't we?
So this and it almost, almost sounds like volleying, doesn't it, as well? His name, Völler. So that's another reason I liked it.
Yeah, but my number one is, I think it's probably going to surprise that it won't surprise you that he's in my top five, but it will surprise you that he's my number one. But this guy was just absolute class wherever he played. I'll tell you what, I'll read this out that I found on ESPN about Matthias Sammer.
Ah, I thought you were going to say my number one, but it's not, which the same position.
Well, I think I know who you're going to go with. So I've done quite well with the exception of Miroslav. In fact, you know what? I thought you were going to have. Oh yeah, you know what? We've left out Thomas Müller, haven't we?
Yes, who's probably statistically the best German player.
Right, I assumed you were going to have Müller, and who I assume your number one is going to be, that I won't mention, which is why I've added a few more in. So special mention to Thomas Müller, because
still going strong.
I would have had him. I've made a mistake there. However, my number one though, I love this player. Holding midfielder, they say, because ESPN did like a best ever Germany 11, so they actually had it in the right positions, which I can read out actually after this. But in holding midfield, they have Matthias Sammer. It says, there's rarely been a better player than Matthias Sammer during his time at Borussia Dortmund. He was the last German sweeper, remember?
Mm.
So back when teams were playing with the sweeper system, he was the last one. Even the Beckenbauer country moved to a back four. So when it was a back three with the sweeper, Matthias Sammer was first name on the team sheet because he played that position. Sammer was not eligible to play for Germany in 1990 because he was born in Dresden, East Germany. So for those that don't know, some of our younger listeners, 1990, it wasn't Germany that won the World Cup. It was West Germany that won the World Cup. And you had people like Sammer, who was East Germany, and Uwe Rosler was famous in Germany as well. And then obviously the two became one. By the time he debuted for the national team right after reunification, football was already declining. Sammer slowed that decay by winning Euro 96, but eventually He too suffered a fall from grace and forced into retirement after a knee injury. But sweepers, because you see three at the back all the time, but you wouldn't call them sweepers these days, would you? You just see one in the center, one on the right, and one at the back, and one in the middle. And that middle one used to be a sweeper, but he retired in 1998.
It's amazing. It's so long ago. Yeah. Yeah, 26 years. Wow.
If you think about it, he was only 31. He was only 31, maybe even still 30 at the time. Dynamo Dresden in East Germany, then Stuttgart, then Inter Milan briefly, then Borussia Dortmund for 115 appearances, but then had to retire early. 23 caps for East Germany, 51 for Germany. He also managed Borussia Dortmund and Stuttgart. His last managerial job was in 2005, so he stopped that fairly quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting that way of playing three centre-halves with a sweeper, isn't it? Because typically now, I suppose a Sheffield United model under Chris Wilder is that the two centre-halves that are wide can actually break forward and become almost like auxiliary fullbacks. And Cheltenham Town did that under Michael Duff, and Duff always joked that he got there before Chris Wilder. But also, I think whether that would come back, I think about England often doing that against good teams, and whether you play Kyle Walker as a sweeper would actually work really well, given our lack of pace generally at the back.
Yeah, but they tend to put Walker on the right-hand side of it.
Yeah, you have to be a ball player, don't you, really, to play that role as well?
Yeah, I think if you're going to be the sweeper, you've got to be naturally either a centre-back or a holding midfielder, I would imagine. But I mean, the pace would certainly help to kind of sweep up, I suppose. But Sam is my number one.
Yeah, sweepers is great shout as well, because I can segue that into my number one, which I know you know who I'm going for, because of mainly Italia 90 and just how awesome he was, but statistically wonderful player. 150 caps, 23 goals. And that may be because of the positional shift, because he played for Germany for an awful long time, because he won the Euros in 1980 and then still in his 20s, the World Cup in 1990 for West Germany, I should clarify as well, still West Germany. At that stage, 5 feet nine inches tall, 1991 FIFA World Player of the Year, simply explosive at Italia 90. Lothar Matthäus, two goals against Yugoslavia, and one in particular where he runs from his own half, beats a player, and then shoots a rocket past the goalkeeper's right hand into the bottom corner from around 26, 27 yards. Pace, power, technique. And then I think as a Manchester United fan, very fortunate that he was still playing, had gone back to sweeper at the end of the 90s and met Manchester United in the 99 Champions League final where he played sweeper. I think that night, if you remember that Roy Keane and Paul Scholes were out through suspensions and injuries, and if they'd both been not been playing that night and Matthäus had played, Lothar Matthäus, I think United might have been in trouble, because he was simply sensational. When you look back, just the energy, the life force in him that certain people had. He was almost like Roy Keane and Yaya Toure rolled into one, it seemed like, at Italia 90. Brilliant player, four goals in the tournament.
Yeah, because he got player of the tournament, didn't he? Because he got, he might have got player of the tournament. Dino Zoff got the golden glove. And and top scorer was Toto Scarlacci.
Yes.
Matthäus... Yeah, I knew you'd have him. And we've missed out Franz Beckenbauer, but that was a game before our time.
Yeah, Gerd Müller as well. Yeah.
Gerd Müller, a game before our time. I should have had Thomas Müller. I kind of I messed up there. I should have got him in, but still, he's an honourable mention nevertheless. And like I said, Alberts would be nowhere near the top five or something like that. It was just that I loved him. And Ziga was there just purely because I loved the story.
Yeah, lefties. We got a lot of lefties, didn't we, in there? So that was good. Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely superb.
So let's get to the baked bean and ketchup clue man here. Played for Augsburg, Blau-Weiß, Berlin, Werder Bremen, Lazio, Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool and Fulham, and won the championship, Football League Championship with Fulham in 2001. Tom?
I believe it's Karl-Heinz Riedler.
It is Karl-Heinz Riedler, World Cup winner, of course, with West Germany in 1990 as well. Yeah, it's amazing that Fulham thing was over 20 years ago, but his career did span quite a long time in the 90s, didn't it? He was obviously quite young, I think, when he won the World Cup with West Germany.
Yeah, he was a really good striker. When he signed for Liverpool, I think it must have been Houllier. And I remember he signed, and like Houllier, remember back then everyone played with two strikers, and Houllier was asked, why have you signed him when you've already got Fowler, Owen, and Oh, who would the other one be? Maybe Heskey, but yeah, he already
I
had
think Heskey
three.
was still at Leicester, was it? I'm not, yeah.
Yeah, he already had three strikers, and Julio was like, "Well, we need four strikers. Everybody needs four strikers." And Riedler played plenty, and Riedler was always asked, like, "Who's the best? Who's your favorite strike partner at Liverpool? Because you've got three brilliant players there." And he always said, Riedler always said, "The best striker is Robbie Fowler." And
Yes.
everyone, Fowler wasn't necessarily playing that as much. It was often Owen, and Owen was often favoured with somebody else. And Riedler was always, "Well, Robbie Fowler's the best one here," like including him. But yeah, it was. I cannot believe that. I can't remember him playing for Fulham, but he was good for Liverpool. And good quiz question that.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it was so it'd have been around probably around your 18th birthday, Tom. So it was all a blur when he was playing for Fulham. It was a big time for you at that era.
Indeed.
Tom,
Oh, good times.
love the conversation. I find it really interesting to talk about Germany and West Germany once again. As you say, you think we had a big rivalry with Germany as well. You should speak to a Dutchman because that rivalry is huge. And the
Right.
74 World Cup and things like that, the final is intense to look back at history. Have a good weekend, my man. I will see you.
Have you got any other? Have you got any other tweets? Because we got a few
Oh yeah,
different.
sorry. Yeah, let's have a quick. We did
Because
get
there
a
was a good
couple of
one
tweets.
from.
Got Rob Mullarkey, who was
That's the one I was going to mention. That was a
yeah.
really good one.
He says one player who won't be on it, but in another lifetime would have been, is Sebastian, looks like Diesler, but I think it was pronounced Dessler at the time, wasn't it? Really thought
Dysler.
Deisler.
Dysler.
Really
Yeah, I
thought he was
remember
going
it.
to be German football and England's tormentor in chief about 25 years ago, but then came the injuries and the depression. He retired in 2007, aged 27. Yeah, always sad. I mean, kind of almost like Germany's Dele. Hopefully Dele will come back for England, but
Yeah.
there's kind of similarities there, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, I remember. I do remember him, and actually, he came up when I was, when doing my research. He did come up in the list of best players Germany have ever had in that top 30. So
Yeah.
he's not been forgotten, even though he retired early.
And John Bicknell, another contribution here, says Matthäus, so Lothar Matthäus, Klinsmann, Klose, Lahm, and Bastian Schweinsteiger, who we didn't have in. And I think, not in a bad way, but I think because he came to Manchester United towards the end of his career, maybe that's impacted our thoughts of Schweinsteiger a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. I think that because
Lee.
it's yeah.
Yeah, Lee at Lee Rimmel says, I was thinking the other day how great that West Germany team was in 1990. In no particular order, the best since then have probably been Bierhoff, Ballack, Kahn. Yeah, Oliver Kahn, what a fantastic goalkeeper. Klose and Lahm, absolute ballers with some great players in the mid to late 2000s too. So yeah, thank you for that, Lee.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find some more there. Yeah, because there's actually we actually got loads here, which is quite hard to go back and find them all. But there was some good ones. Oh, well done. We should say well done to Martin Godwin, because remember your quiz question last week.
Yes.
I got it right, but I said that I bet nobody else could get that, because it was actually very, very difficult one. It was Neil Webb, wasn't it? And
Yes.
in fairness, he got it. He
Got it on
says
Postman, it
got it
said.
straight
Yeah.
away. So
When I
great. So
mentioned
well done,
Postman,
really.
yeah.
He deserves a shout out for that, because that was a really hard quiz question last week.
Well done, Martin. Well done, Tom. Speak to you next week, my man. Take it easy.